Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast,
where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media.
I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Hey, everyone. Mario Carrasco here for the New Mainstream Podcast. Super excited today. Colleague, I think I can call her a friend, Kai Fuentes, president and CEO of Ebony Marketing Systems. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, you can call me a friend. I think we're friends.
It's so a little bit of background on how this episode came to be. Kai and I were recently at the CEO Summit and realized she'd never been on. And I genuinely thought I have had Kai on the show before because we talked so much during the pandemic and working on some initiatives, but glad that you're actually on the podcast now.
I am here. Well, lucky for you, I love you and I want to be here. So I'm here.
You sound great. We were talking about how your husband is in the audio industry. So appreciate that your house is soundproof, no echo.
It's crazy. Like, he's incredibly obsessed with sound. And then as a result, so am I. Like, if I hear something, I'm like, oh my God. And so when we moved in, a lot of our walls are soundproofed for a whole bunch of reasons. So yeah, shout out to him for doing that. Because you can't hear any echo, right? I don't have headphones on.
No, it's good. And I think that's a sign. You gotta start your own podcast. You're ready to go.
we'll see about that. I mean, I think a podcast is a labor of love, isn't it though? Like, you gotta get guests, you gotta, it's a mood.
It is. It's like, so we're on our sixth or seventh year. At first it was not a labor of love. At first it was like I made the mistake of trying to create a podcast that promoted the company, and I would have people come on and talk about our reports, and it was boring. But I started to realize, like, I had those really cool guests and I was more interested in talking to them, and it evolved into getting people in the insights industry, marketing, talking about issues of multicultural, and now it's been great.
That's amazing. Is it like kind of like therapeutic for you to do this?
It's therapeutic. Yeah, it is therapeutic. Just to realize so many of us have shared experiences in the industry. It's also just super interesting, like speaking to people that I look up to, and hearing their journeys is really cool, which is a segue into, I would love to talk about your journey. So before we get into other questions, like, one, tell us about Ebony Marketing Systems, and two, I mean, it's an incredible story. So I'm gonna let you tell it.
Oh, thank you. Well, Ebony Marketing Systems, we're a multicultural, qualitative, quantitative research firm. We specialize in the multicultural markets. That's our jam. We do that well, and we enjoy doing that. And we enjoy helping communities of color. My journey is, I am a self-proclaimed market research brat, as I like to call myself. I grew up in the industry in, 1980. My mother started Ebony Field, and that was all field intercepts. Then that company morphed into something bigger, Ebony Marketing Research. And through the 80s and 90s, my mom and dad, and it was a family business at that point in time, all hands were on deck.
Your mom founded it, and then your dad got involved later?
Dad got involved later. My dad is a social worker, hence my social work background as well. Mm. And my dad was a social worker. It was the early 80s. Things were happening and the business was growing. You know, my mom is also from Costa Rica, so she was able to interview in Spanish and English. And as a Black Latina in those days, that was like, oh my, where is this? Who is this person? And, you know, and so my dad was a social worker. He was working at Catholic Charities. And my mom was like, look, we're having this new baby, which was me. The business is exploding. come help me. I need help.
Yeah.
And he and he came on board. And that, you know what's so interesting about that time?
So you were listening to Intercepts in the womb.
In the womb. It's bananas. And my dad also, he was at he got drafted to the NBA as a referee.
Wow.
And my mom was like, I need help with this business. We have two kids. So shout out to my dad for like not going after his actual dream and holding my mom down in her dream. And I think a lot of times men don't get credit for that, where, you know, they have the wives doing what they love to do, what they're passionate about. And they stay back and they hold the family down, or they, you know, take a different type of job. So
shout out to your dad. I mean, and like, I think they don't get credit because it doesn't happen often. I think most of the time, unfortunately, in our society, women let their dreams slip away to support a man's career. So that's pretty amazing. Your dad, you know, that generation especially, right?
Yeah, he's a boomer. And there was no gender roles for my parents, right? So my dad did all the lunches. My dad was the class father. He was the one making the 100 cupcakes, you know, for me to bring to school. Like, he was a class parent. So he was booking, you know, play dates. Like, so I grew up with very different kind of gender norms, and I'm using that in quotes, right? And that gave me a lot of female empowerment. And as a result, I truly believe that I can do anything I put my mind to.
100%. So you're born. Tell us how early are you helping out in the business? Like, what age? What's your first memory?
5. Nobody cared in the 90s and 80s. Nobody cared about that. Like, when I tell you, all hands were on deck. And at 5, I remember I was stapling. My parents had a field office in Rockaway, Queens. And shout out to my hometown, Queens, New York. And I had to staple questionnaires together. I have like PTSD from paper cuts. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had Band-Aids on my hands from paper cuts, and it was like, okay, now you have to put 10 of these, 1, 2, 3, and I'm looking at the numbers. A lot of my reading I learned from surveys. Wow. A lot of my counting I learned from, you know, looking at tables, like at a young age. So this stuff is like truly embedded in me. Research is a huge piece of who I am. It's crazy.
And so you grow up. I mean, you mentioned you had a social work background. Like, what, like, when you went to school and teenager and 20s, like, was market research all in your mind, or did you have like a rebellious moment where you're like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah, I had rebellious moments in other ways, but not when it came to research. You know, it was something. Yeah. Yeah, you know, so I did my first Intercept interview at 11, and I was bit with the bug, like, wow, I want to talk to people. I want to learn more. I want to learn their stories. I want to learn their journeys. And I was working in the business all through college, through grad school. I was always, always working the business. I've only had 3 other jobs in my life, and I was fired from all 3 of them.
What were they?
I know, that was the open, easy lead-in, right? So I was a waitress, and I got fired because I was too friendly, and I ended up giving away a lot of the food.
This is not a focus group room where you're just like handing out food.
Totally. It's like, okay, the 6 o'clock group needs to eat sandwiches, you know? And I was tour guide, and I got fired. And then I was a very brief baby. I mean, I was a tutor. It wasn't many jobs that I had. It was always research. I always really worked for myself, never really, you know, worked for a company. I always worked for my mom's company or or mine.
That's amazing. And so Ebony Field became Ebony Marketing Systems. Was that you in terms of the rebranding? Tell us about like the transition from your parents to you running it.
Yeah, it was pretty bananas because Ebony Field became Ebony Marketing Research all in the 80s and 90s. It was that 2007, my mom was like, you know, this, no, 2008. She was like, this isn't my jam anymore. Like she has a spiritual calling. So she went ahead and she's a pastor. She's a bishop now of a church and,
wow. You
know, and she has a nonprofit and dad is helping her with that as well. So this is something that is fitting with his soul a little bit more. So that's good. And so they're doing their nonprofit. My mom's like, I don't know what you know, she's like, you've been doing this. Like, what are you thinking of doing? And then I started Ode to My Mama after Ebony Marketing Systems. It was kind of like it wasn't much of a takeover. It was like, so you doing this? So you know, what's happening, Kai? And I was like, okay. And I was super young and oh my God, had no idea what I was doing as a business owner, but I had some idea. But then a lot of it was like embedded in my heart and spirit. And then, yeah, I had to untangle a lot of things getting into that space. And
yeah.
I felt like for a long time I had to be my mom. And I realized that the only shoes I have to fill are my own. And me being honest and open with myself and who I am, who Kai is, I'll be the best owner in that way. And once I've owned who I am, it's made my journey easier as a business owner.
I think we talked about, I remember talking about that where, same for me, right? Like, when we first started Think Now, I felt like we had to present a certain way and this idea of professionalism and not talking about our personal views. And once we shed that we really just started to grow.
I think people of color, I don't know, I'm going to speak from my journey. You let me know what yours was in that. But I think as people of color, that's more of a pressure for us to have to feel like we have to conform to a certain kind of corporate way and that we can't be ourselves and all those other things. I don't know.
100%. And I my journey is different. I was in the corporate world and I worked in corporate for like a long time before founding Think Now. And that was just my norm. Like I didn't even know what code switching was. Like I didn't have a term for it, but that was my lived experience. And not only in corporate, like I grew up probably one of the most polar opposites to Queens, right? I grew up in Simi Valley, California, a very not diverse place. So I was code switching for a while.
Sometimes, you know, it's funny. I don't even know when we realize we're code switching. Do you know what I mean? For me, it's so automatic. I hear what you're saying, but like, it's just, it's automatic. And recently I've been trying to snap out of that and just be like, okay, just nah, girl, just like say what you're going to say and say it how you're going to say it, you know, but and I'm like, wait, hold on. There's a time and place. And, you know, I'm all caught up in that. But it's like, let's just be free and liberated and just own our talk and own our stuff, you know?
Yeah, and what's cool about that, right, is that one, we get to be authentically ourselves, but two, in the business that we're in, like the more authentic we are, the better data there is for clients, right? Because on the flip side, you talk about respondents, we don't want them code switching. We want them to tell us the truth in surveys and focus groups, right?
Facts on facts on facts. Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. And that authenticity does present better results for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, and so I think this is a good transition talking about, you know, I don't think it's a lot of people, but I'm sure you've heard this before. I've been straight up asked this, like, why do you need a company focused on multicultural? Like, can't can't just any research company do it. I think we just talked on one reason why, right? What would you respond to that? Why have a focus?
Yeah. Well, first of all, why not is really the question, but why not? And also in 2045, don't quote me on this, but I was reading the other day, 2045, the world is going to be full of more brown people than anything else.
Yeah.
Well, if companies want to stay ahead of the curve, if they want to stay ahead of their consumer, if they want to stay relevant, oh yeah, you need to hire us. Yeah. Because with that same piece of authenticity, because we're going to bring the authenticity to who we're researching and what we're doing. That's why it's also super important to have people, to have a matched moderator ethnicity wise with your respondents. This is why you don't have, you know, a different ethnic moderator and respondents. It's not going to connect. You lose that authenticity. People are afraid to code switch in that way. So my thing is, why not?
100%. I agree. And I think, you know, pushback I get on that, and I love that, is like, well, you know, a trained moderator, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And yeah, it sounds good theoretically, but the reality is our culture, it's steeped in ethnic race dynamics, class, right? It's not, there's so much going on there that it'd be great if we didn't have to, but that's not reality, right?
It's no bueno, baby. You know what's funny too? Like even within the culture, like the Latino culture, right? So several months ago, I did some Latino groups, and as a Black Latina, you know, I almost had to prove my ethnicity to them, yeah. And I even thought like, maybe I shouldn't even do those groups, right? That can even happen within cultures as well. So it's very important to understand those nuances and stuff like that. I mean, obviously I've been doing Latino groups for a while, as I was able to deal with it, but this one particular group was just kind of not buying it. And I even thought like,
you know? I know, it resonates with me, right? Like I was born here. I'm first gen. I'm bilingual, but I wouldn't moderate a Spanish dominant group. They're gonna be like, nah, bro. Like,
yeah. And this group was in English. It wasn't even in Spanish. I don't trust my Spanish enough to, like, I trust my Spanish. Like, you know, we're in Costa Rica and I'm with the family, and you know, we need to eat, sleep, go do fun things, and I have conversations and we can get around and stuff like that. But I don't, you know, I don't trust my Spanish enough to be, you know, in a group. Right. But
right.
Yeah, we just have to be, we have to be really careful about that. And back to your example, exactly. There are nuances. So you can't necessarily have a white person. Let's just be very explicit and clear. You can't have a white person do a Black group. And I've heard, or do a Latino group or AAPI group, you know, and I've heard the argument of, oh, well, you know, I'm coming in and you just tell me, just, you know, I'm just here as a researcher and just tell me what you're thinking. Just, you know, just, I'm not from your culture. So explain to me, you know?
Yeah.
That's not necessarily, that's coming from like this hierarchy place of privilege that respondents, I don't think, really going to jive with. So.
Yeah. I mean, if we dig deep into the history of that, right, it goes into how anthropology and how racialized like that whole thing was, right? Like, and it's like, no, we're not a culture to be viewed like that in a scientific setting. But I love your point about, you know, 2045. I think in the US it's even sooner than that. Actually, it's right now. If we look at Gen Z, it's the first generation in our country's history that's more diverse than not, right? I think right at 51%. And so that brings up another issue, about diversity in our industry at large, right? Like, I don't know the numbers specifically in our industry, but I know that it's not reflective of society at large in the U.S. in terms of how many Latinos are in market research and how many Black people in AAPI. But I've seen your journey. I've been watching you become a thought leader in this space, which has been amazing, and your involvement with the Insights Association. And I just want to, like, how do you feel? How do you feel, one, about the state of our industry and the efforts that have been happening? I mean, I would say in earnest since 2020. Like, I think there's been efforts prior to that, but it's been the past kind of 4 years. I want to get your pulse on that.
Oof. I got several pulses because I'm pulling information from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. Remember, I grew up in this industry.
Bring it all.
Okay. And I have a theory. I have theories and I have all kinds of things. So, all right, I'm going to spit it. Here we go. So in the 80s and 90s, I had the privilege of going to different networking events with my parents. And it was always all super, super white. And that's just what it was. And I remember asking my mom one time, why is it like this? Why is this? Because, you know, I lived in Queens. I was just used to diversity all over. Why is it like this? My mom was just like, it's just the way it is, Kai Kai. That's just how it is. Now, fast forwarding to 2020, we have made strides, but not enough. Not enough. I think that in 2020, everybody, there's a lot of buzz around DEI and initiatives and all that. And that kind of fell by the wayside a little bit. I think a couple of things happened. I think folks of color, I don't know if we kept our foot on the gas as much as we should have. I think we saw a little bit of hope and we're like, okay. And then, so I think that's one theory that I have. I think that we have to keep our foot on the gas constantly and just, we have to push that. We have to be in places. We need to be in seats. We need to be in places of decision-making and power. So I feel like we've made some strides, but not enough, yeah. Not enough. And I mean, a lot of companies, it's interesting because my other theory is there are companies that have people of color working there, but they're not front of the house. So I have this whole thing, front of the house, back of the house. These are just little things I play with in my head.
That's your waitressing days.
There we go. There you go. But I was giving away free food. Yeah, totally. I love to give away free food. I do. But, you know, the front of the house is normally the younger, more presentable person that comes and they escort you to your table. Have you looked in the kitchen? Who's working back there? Nine times out of 10, it's people of color. Same rules apply to our industry. Who's in the front of the house of a lot of these conferences that you go to? They have a lot. They do have people of color working, but they're not bringing them to the front of the house. They're keeping them in the back of the house. I challenge companies to bring folks that are in the kitchen, that are keeping businesses running, bring them to the front of the house. And if they say, oh, they're not ready for that, or they don't present well, have you tried? Have you given them the space to do so? People only change when they're exposed to things. And exposure is everything.
And if this is the first time I'm hearing this theory, and wow, it's real.
You keeping them in the back of the house making pasta and rice, they will never be able to seat people at the table.
Yeah.
So I challenge companies to do so. Because there are people of color that work. But yeah, we still have more time to go. And then my last theory is I think our industry has never had a lot of people of color working in the industry because what do we do in our industry? We ask questions. You and I both know it is a privilege for people of color to ask questions. No. This is the space that Normally people were asking us questions. Where are you going? Where have you been? What you doing? Put your hands up. So yeah, I just, yeah.
No, yeah. That's deep. That's
so deep. It's a privilege. It's a privilege to ask questions. And we've never been granted that privilege. That's why folks like us can grant privileges to others to ask questions.
I want to touch on all your 3 points. One, the foot on the gas thing is real. I'm 100% guilty of letting that gas go. Like 2020, I was all in. I don't know if you know Whitney Dunlop Fowler.
Yeah, I do. Shout out to her.
Yeah, I was, you know, really involved with Insights in Color. But it's tiring though. It's tiring putting the gas on like constantly, right? And then, you know, there's the whole, like, we're entrepreneurs, right? So not only are we trying to help this diversity issue in our industry, but we're trying to run companies too. So it was just like, okay, I don't want, I got to a point 2021 where I was like, I don't want to talk about that anymore.
I agree. Yeah. I do. It's
tough that the onus is on us.
Should not be, but it is. And and I think sometimes when our foot's on the gas, it's tiring because it's bringing up a burden that we've already carried for so many years. And it's bringing up, you know, when somebody said something mean to you as when you were 7 years old on the playground, you know, because you're a person of color, you know, it just brings up all of these things. So it's hard to have your foot on the gas. But I think that if we all take turns where it's like, Mario, you're like, all right, I'm tapped out. And I'm like, okay, great, brother. I got it. And then and I'm like, all right, Mario, I'm tapped out. Pass the rock.
Yeah.
Maybe we can continue to have the foot on the gas. And that's the importance of working together and working in unity. And all of us being on the same page, because then we can, you know, we can share the burden and keep our foot on the gas, but kind of rotate it.
So the second point you brought up about front of house, back of house, that's my favorite point that you've brought up, because I think a lot of the efforts in our industry, which is great, is about bringing new people in, bringing more diverse faces in. But you're so right that there's a solution in front of us that I think is easier. Just give the back of the house people a chance. And for sure, there, you know, a lot of people are not going to feel comfortable going to these spaces, but you got to give them the option. And if people are, to your point, if quote unquote may not present well, give them the resources to present well. It's a learnable thing, you know. I was that person. I still am. I don't like going to conferences. You know that. But I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, right? Like,
you gotta be out there in these streets. Yeah.
Like, that's a really powerful point, and I like that call to action. Like, give people doing the work, give them the opportunity, and honestly, like, it's not about charity. They will surprise you. People will step up and contribute to the company in ways that you can't imagine.
Absolutely. And sometimes people just want a shot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and then they feel more invested in the company. My company took a shot to bring me to this.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, I just feel like it's really the right thing to do. And you see it in restaurants all the time. And that's kind of like how the analogy came up. Like, the hostess or host is always a certain kind of type.
Yeah.
And everybody else that's keeping the engine running, you never see.
Yeah, no, and it's it makes me, I wanted to bring up a connection we had in Carlos Garcia. Carlos Garcia, I mean, a real trailblazer in our industry, entrepreneur. He founded Garcia Research. He gave me a shot. He gave lots of incredible people shots. Carlos Yanez, my business partner, one of the best companies I've ever worked for. And these were all people that were historically looked over. I mean, these are people working in our industry, and you look at where they're at now, all of them doing amazing things. And that's like a great example of people that were relegated to the back of the house, coming to the front of the house and really improving our industry. But I would love for you to share that story you shared with me about your interaction with Carlos.
Oh yeah. I mean, Carlos is a legend in our industry. I did my first interview at 11, my first bid at 16. So, I mean, I can't make this stuff up. This is bananas. And now that I look back at it and I see how young my kids are, I was like, it's just crazy. Anyway, I did my first bid. He called in Garcia and Ebony. We did a lot of work together back in the days, a lot of work together. And I did my first bid, and the numbers didn't add up, like, at all. The CPI was all messed up. The incentive was just a hot mess. And I sent it over and was like, okay, this is it. Did I fax it over? Was that faxing fax time? Yeah. Remember probably that? With the faxing, and then like the paper would curl. Yeah. You'd have to use two. Oh, my goodness. The good old days. Anyway, I sent it over to him, and he called me back and was like, hey, Kai, I just want to go over this with you. And he walked me through how my numbers didn't add up. Now, none of the bid made sense, and it was actually the wrong bid.
Like, yeah.
And he was so amazing, and he took his time with me to talk me through it, and didn't make me feel bad, wasn't judgmental.
Yeah.
So at that point in time, that's a way that to bring someone to the front of the house, right? I don't know why my parents weren't checking my numbers. I don't know
what
happened.
Busy. They were busy. They're like, you're 16. You started at five. You have 10 years experience.
Yeah, 10 years experience, 16. Absolutely. It's still can't add numbers. But shout out to Carlos and all the other folks that have come before us.
Right.
That have really paved the path for us to do what we do. And I think a responsibility for us and our generation is to continue to keep our foot on the gas and pass the baton back and let the next generation, you know, continue to run and continue to, you know, because as you make a path, it gets smoother. It gets smoother and smoother, you know? So we're smoothing out the path for the next folks in line. And I'm proud of that.
Oh, for sure. And I love the next generation. I mean, I've mentioned this before, like talking to Gen Z and interviewing Gen Z, so much less timid than I am about issues of diversity. They're just like, straight up will ask you. They don't care.
I love it. And they're changing the game. They're changing the game on gender norms. Like, they're changing the game in so many things in terms of how they handle their relationships. I mean, they're so much more evolved. Yeah. I mean, I'm a millennial, geriatric millennial, but that's okay. I was so where they were, I was so timid.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the empowerment that they have and that they're going after things and they're just like, yeah, I'm here. And they're taking up space and whole space. Shout out to that generation, because we were not doing that. But you know what I think? I have another theory. I think some of it is YouTube. Like,
the YouTube?
Roll with me on this. Like, I feel like you could get anything you want. Like, you could unclog your toilet with YouTube, or you can learn how to do a presentation. You can learn the secrets of Excel on YouTube. You can learn how to do public speaking on YouTube. And I feel like the access, it's not YouTube, it's just the access to information that they have that we didn't have. You know, we had encyclopedias. Remember, that was the jam?
I loved encyclopedias.
Me too.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. And when my parents invested in the A to Z, because you could do like A to M and then M to Z.
Yeah.
But they got a big project, so they got the 24 letter joint, right. A to Z. And that was our knowledge. That was our information. But these phones are like full of knowledge, full of information. So I think they just have more information, more knowledge. And then also parents, we are also empowering our kids more. I know I empower my kids way more than I was empowered. My kids are allowed to ask me questions that was not even a thing for me growing up.
Right.
And, you know, even like simple things, like they know so much. Like even my 6-year-old the other day was saying, "Oh, mama, we'll be there soon. We're driving someplace together." And I was like, "Yeah, we'll be there soon. How do you know that?" He's like, "The GPS. In 8 minutes, we'll be to our destination." And I was like, "I didn't even know that as a kid. I didn't even know where our destination was. We're going here. We're going to end up here. We're going to stay here for a little bit. And we're going to..." I couldn't ask questions. But we are also, as parents, allowing, giving our kids a space to ask questions.
That's so true. And I know your kids' age, roughly. I think our kids are like, what are they calling them? Generation A or double A? Have you heard about that?
Are they
alpha?
Are they alpha? They're alpha. Yeah, generation alpha. Yeah.
I'm curious where they'll be at, right?
I know. I'm curious and like, whoa, what's happening? I don't know though. It's interesting because I feel like it should almost be segmented by COVID. I think it should be like alpha C. Because like my 6-year-old was 2 when COVID happened.
Yeah. And
he has some other stuff that my 10-year-old doesn't have, like other social stuff that's a little different for him that my 10-year-old does not have because he wasn't as young when COVID happened.
Right.
So I think that we need to like modify that. It'll all come out in the research. It'll all come out in the wash.
It'll be BC and AC. Before COVID, after COVID.
I like that. Look at the sub-segmenting and stuff.
So flash forward. So now, I mean, it's like, you've been involved with Ebony almost since its inception. But like, what's been the proudest project that you're most proud of working on it? Would love to hear about that and why.
Yeah. And in my career, I did my first group at 19. So I've done so many projects. One of the most recent ones that we did in 2022. And I presented this at some conferences. We did the Black Women's Working Project. And it was how corporate America or is corporate America contributing to Black women's wellness or not contributing to Black women's wellness. And surprise, surprise, corporate America is not contributing to Black women's wellness. And we gave direct solutions as to how corporate America could contribute to Black women's wellness. That project, it was a long project, but it was a project of a lifetime for me talking to other Black women in such a deep, intimate way and coming out with solutions and potentially coming out with a policy handbook and all these cool things that are going to come out of it. The coolest part was everybody worked on this project was Black. Wow. And so one day we took a Zoom together of all of us a Zoom, whatever, still shot.
Screenshot.
And it was just so amazing to work with so many dynamic sisters, and we're making real change. And I'm at a point in my career where I've probably talked about every topic 50, 60 times over.
Yeah.
And this one sung to my soul. So that's one. And then another one recently we worked with persons living with HIV. In the trans community, talking about particular medication and stuff like that. And that really sunk to my soul too, because we were doing direct impact work for these communities in Harlem. So those are the two that ring true. And the Guinness Project when I was 8, but we won't talk about that one.
Things are making more sense now.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. I think it's easy to forget in our work, like we have the potential to make a real impact on society, you know? I mean, that, and so those two projects, that's amazing. Congrats for that.
Thank you. Yeah. Keep making change, you know, little by little, use what's in your hands.
Yeah. So we're almost out of time, believe it or not. Want to end on a lighter note and talk about music. So what have you been, what's on Kai's Spotify or Apple playlist lately?
Okay. Well, I am a nutty professor. I'm locked out of Spotify more than I would like, but when I don't ask, but Erykah Badu, I'm a huge fan of E. Badu, seen her a gazillion times. She's always on my playlist. After the Grammys, Tracy Chapman came back on my playlist. She's always on my playlist, but now it's after the Grammys, seeing her perform again after so many years. She looked amazing too, by the way. That sung to my soul. I've been rocking that lately. Also, Ezra Band. Yeah. My son's name is Ezra. And I was just going through Spotify and I was like, oh, this is nice. That's like, if you're working on a proposal or you're reading stuff and you don't need lyrics.
Okay.
You know, just something easy. Also, what I've been rocking lately is, No Doubt Tragic Kingdom album.
Wow, classic.
Yeah.
Are they touring again? Because I've been hearing about Gwen and No Doubt. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't. Are they touring, really?
I think so. I read an article about how Gwen finds it difficult to sing some of the old songs because she was predicting what stuff that happened to her in the future.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I would love to see them. I was a huge No Doubt fan growing up, and I this morning I was actually listening to Tragic Kingdom. So that's basically Bob Marley is just a staple in the house. He's just on repeat. Of course, always Stevie. He's just on repeat in the background all the time.
Yeah.
So many others. And there's other ones that I don't even know names, you know, it's just, they'll just throw a playlist on for me and I'll just rock out to that. And always, Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang.
I'm from New York, so I gotta rep the Wu.
I love that. Love that. I haven't heard of Ezra, all the other ones, Erykah Badu, Tracy Chapman, same, like, so cool. And then read about her history, like her, how she got found. I mean, I was reading, talk about bringing back a house to the front of the house. Someone, she had like a tape, like a demo tape, that was getting played at a college radio. Hmm. Someone heard it on college radio and was like, this is incredible. They stole the, they went to the college radio, stole the tape. And the son of a record executive got the tape, handed it to his dad, and was like, you need to sign this person. And that's how Tracy Chapman came to be.
Wow. I didn't know the level of that story. I knew it was just some weird way she got discovered, but what a talent.
And her first album was just like, boom, instant hit. And like, I listened to that album and I'm like, it's just truly timeless, you know, like Stevie, like Erykah Badu, and for her to finally get her flowers. It's, I mean, not finally, she was huge and she had her time, but like seeing this generation appreciate her is really cool.
I'm also a big Hall & Oates fan.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
Man Eater.
Absolutely. Anita Baker. She's Sunday morning, my Sunday morning flow with Anita, you know, just, it's just, music is the backdrop of my soul.
Fun fact, No Doubt and Bush was the first live concert I ever saw. No Doubt opening up for Bush. That's the tour very that cool. She met Gavin Rosdale on, I believe.
Oh, very cool. Wow. Yeah. That was your first?
That was my first concert. My first concert, yeah.
What was my first? My first concert was Wu-Tang. I was
15. Man, that's amazing.
And they did, and it was the Urban Aid, and they did this whole thing at MSG, and it was like Wu, Nas, just like everybody from New York. And I thought I was like everything. I was there with my baggy pants and big earrings and lipstick popping and not adding up bids right, but doing the thing.
You know they're going to have a residency in Vegas.
Good for them. I don't know if it's going to be as big as Usher's, though. I'm so sad I miss Usher's residency.
Yeah, same. Well, he's got to have another one with all this momentum he has, though, from Super Bowl. I feel like he's got to have a round two.
He's got to do a round two. And, you know, he can sing to me. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He likes to sing to people. He can sing to me. All right.
Hopefully he hears this podcast the next time.
He's like, hopefully, okay. yeah, exactly. On his roller skates and all the things, yeah.
Awesome. Well, so like amazing to have you on. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and insights about that project. Well, one, if people want to find out about Ebony Marketing Systems, drop the links. We'll also have them in the show notes, but. What's the best way to like get in contact with you?
Oh yeah. So you can hit me up on LinkedIn, Kai Fuentes, FUENTES. And or you can go to Ebony's website, ebonysystems.com. We're redoing it, by the way. I mean,
you know,
as an owner, you're like, oh, good God. Yeah. Like, you can't even look at your own website anymore. Well,
yeah.
Anyway, stay tuned for a much needed facelift.
And will that, where is that research that you mentioned about Black women wellness? Is that on your site or is there another site for that?
No, but we're working on toolkits with the nonprofit now. So, but you know, that's a great idea. You know what? Thanks for that. We should probably add that presentation to the website, right?
I think people would be interested in that for sure.
All right. Thanks for that nugget. Appreciate you.
Awesome. Thanks everyone for listening. And thanks again, Kai.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform.